Good evening. My name is Bora, and it is my pleasure to introduce, in honor of the beginning of summer, the first ever, hopefully not last, CWOW summer playlist. So I'm not actually an avid maker of playlists, lists of songs, or mixtapes if you're of that generation, but I love receiving them. I love receiving them from people who have kind of curated them for me or want to introduce me to a different kind of music. I'm kind of a blank slate when it comes to music, actually, so I just love it when people give me playlists. My birthday is in January, just in case. But we thought it would be fun, in a spirit of summer and fun, to make a Church Without Walls playlist. Tonight we're starting a new series in 1 John. And so what we've done is we have reached out to just a variety of folks in the community and asked them, given them a word that is a theme in the book of 1 John, and asked them to kind of reflect on it and then choose a song. That's kind of pretty much the only direction we've given them. We haven't said like, oh, it has to be a worship song or it has to be this genre of music. It's not necessarily connected with the sermon, but it's just whatever reflection they would like to have on that particular theme for that week. So tonight we're going to have our first one. Tonight's word and theme is joy, and our first sharer is, oh, there's going to be a little reflection and then a song clip, sorry. Word is joy, and our sharer is J.J. Hansen.
So I chose a song called I Choose, and it's by India Arie, one of my favorite artists, and I've seen her perform in Scotland and in New York, so, you know, I'm a fan. She happened to be there when I was there, so I didn't travel. Anyway, so the song is I Choose, and I chose this song. It brings some good memories. One of my best friends, Chandra, who lives in Oakland, that everyone thinks is my sister, because apparently we look alike. The day it came out, she went and bought it back in 2006. It's probably the last CD I've actually, physical CD that I've owned, because everything I do online now. But she bought it, and we were in her very cool truck driving through Oakland with my girls singing India Arie to the top of our lungs. So it's a nice memory of singing across the generations. One of the lines in the song is, I choose to be authentic in everything I do. And I think as a woman who is, you know, getting older, I've appreciated that line because I choose to be authentic. I wear my hair the way I want to wear it. I want to be the same person no matter where I am. So anyway, when I think of joy, I think of freedom. I think of authenticity. I think of honesty, not just happiness. And so that's the song I chose.
And I got so much to say. Gotta get this off of my chest. I gotta let it go today. I was always too concerned about what everybody would think. But I can live for everybody. I gotta live my life for me, yeah. I've reached a fork in the road of my life today. And nothing's gonna happen unless I
I'm driving these bags, I'm making love for my job. I choose I love me some Indie Arvey. A reading from 1 John chapter 1, verses 1 to 4. We declare to you what was from the beginning, what we have heard, what we have seen with our eyes, what we have looked at and touched with our hands, concerning the word of life. This life was revealed, and we have seen and testify to it, and declare to you the eternal life that was with the Father and was revealed to us. We declare to you what we have seen and heard, so that you also may have fellowship with us. And truly our fellowship is with the Father and with his Son, Jesus Christ. We are writing these things so that our joy may be complete. The word of the Lord.
Hi there, good evening.
Hi.
I'm Pete Gidlin. I'm a member here at Church Without Walls, and I'm also a part of the teaching team here. And I'm also somebody who feels like I want to know more and go deeper into what joy is and what that means. And as we leave a season and a series of talking about joy in our church, and where our church really felt like joy was kind of a word for us, I kind of feel like, wow, I'm kind of there, but I kind of wish I could know more. And I wish I could feel more and experience more. And even as I was hearing so many of you talk about your experiences and joy and things like that, I kind of had the feeling of, I think I've been growing, but I want that experience too. I want to know about that. And joy is kind of one of those things where I feel like when I say it, when I say joy or talk about joy, I'm not really getting all the way there. Kind of like love too, right? When you say, even when I think I love someone, I think when I tell my wife I love her, I do love her, but sometimes saying it sounds kind of funny. Like, what does that mean? Can I grasp what love means? Or when I say that I have joy, can I really grasp what that means? So I'm definitely somebody who wants to go deeper into that. So here we are leaving a joy series and going right into something I'm really excited about, and that's the Summer of Love series that we're starting in 1 John. And basically I'm here tonight to say, hey, this is a great book. 1 John is something you should be reading this summer, and I want to give you some tools to kind of look into it and kind of share some of my excitement with you about this series, but not just about the series, not about Sunday nights. Because whatever, we could do whatever on Sunday nights. But actually, like, hopefully get you hooked on maybe reading into the book during your week, on and off and throughout the summer. So here's how it's going to look, folks. We got a lot of weeks in summer, and there's going to be some special events in there for some things like a baptism and things like that, and the covenant later in the summer and stuff. So that'll be take up little breaks in our schedule. But there's a lot there. So each week, a speaker is going to come up and kind of take a different chunk, hopefully pretty chronological, but we'll talk about how it's hard to do chronological in 1 John in a minute. But pretty chronological and pretty kind of theme-based, but I think we're going to go really deep into the text on this. And you can see the themes are broken down into kind of one-word things, and Bora talked about we're going to hear some music every week and kind of have fun with that. So I hope you're into this. I know that summer's kind of a tough time to be here every week or whatever, but that's why I'm saying, hey, I think that you could be looking into this book on your own and checking it out. I'm pretty excited about it. Jumping the gun. So why are we calling it the Summer of Love? Why are we calling it, what does that have to do with 1 John? Is this some weird hippie thing, or is this, does it have something to do with 1 John? And yeah, it has everything to do with 1 John. See, John was this guy who is kind of known for, he was one of Jesus' closest disciples. In fact, he called himself the disciple that Jesus loved, which is kind of in his gospel that he wrote, that's how he referred to himself, and saying, instead of saying me or that guy John, he said the disciple Jesus loved, which is, that's pretty brave to do that, but it's because you can feel it. He really loved Jesus and thought that Jesus, or knew that Jesus loved him. And as you read the gospel, or as if you read John's letters and stuff, you get this real sort of lovey-dovey, mushy feeling in the language that he uses. Like he says beloved a lot, and he talks about sort of like fellowship and sort of kind of what's not really translated well, but it means kind of more of like a mushy, all together, we love each other kind of fellowship. And so John is this guy all about love. In fact, when I read John, you know what it makes me think of? It makes me think of my childhood. I grew up about 20 minutes east of here in a funny little Baptist church. And as I read 1 John, I get all these songs in my head that I thought I forgot from my childhood that are so really important to me and who I was growing up and who I am now.
Yes.
In fact, can I show you a couple? They're just right. They're just verses that are put to music. And so one, which one is this? It goes like this. You can sing along with me if you know it. And if you don't know it, don't feel bad. You know, so you're welcome to sing if you know the song. It goes like this. Behold what manner of love the Father has given unto us. Different version? That's okay.
That we shall be called the children of God.
All right, and then good job. and then this one I love. It goes like this. It goes, beloved. Me. I know them. I'm not looking at anything right now. I just know those words are ingrained in my head. And what a great thing to have as a kid. Those such affirming words that God loves me. I have fellowship with Him. Really, substantial things in my life. Simple, but substantial. And so this book is full of stuff like this. But you know... It also has some heavy-duty stuff, too. It also has some heavy-duty stuff in it, too. So I don't want to, like, sugarcoat it like it's just all about love. Some of the craziest stuff that I think I've read in Scripture is in 1 John. Okay, so you have to also understand that John was kind of a weird guy. We think he might be one of the only of the inner disciples there to actually live and not be, executed. And he did, like, according to tradition, he did, like, all kinds of weird stuff. Like, there's stories about him going as an old man riding on horseback across huge lengths of distance and getting in fights. And he was the guy that was banished to Patmos where he had the vision of Revelation. So this guy was heavy duty. He talks about love and it's all very mushy, but he seems very kind of weird and wacky and hard to handle. And so there are some real punchy lines. If you read through this book, you'll kind of go, wow, and it'll smack you upside the head with some really kind of, you know, heavy-duty language in there about what it is to follow Jesus. And I encourage you just to kind of dig into that. Right, oh, there's other things like, hey, you know, just a fun fact. If I was to say, where would you find the word Antichrist in the Bible? You'd probably say Revelation. But the deal is, Antichrist isn't anywhere in Revelation. There's nowhere in the book of Revelation that talks about Antichrist. Guess where the word is found? In 1 John. And it's totally not like one person. John doesn't talk about Antichrist as a guy. He says that anybody who doesn't believe Jesus Christ came in the flesh is Antichrist. So it's very inclusive language. And that brings me to kind of why did John write this book? What was his purpose? I think it's kind of fun to look at this little bit that we just read. You know, it really reminds me of if anybody in here has read the Gospel of John, the way it starts is totally, Gospel of John is totally different than the other Gospels because it doesn't go chronologically through Jesus' life. It doesn't start with like the Christmas story. It starts with this passage where it says up top, where it says, "In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God," and all this stuff. And then, as you start to read, 1 John, it starts off with that which was from the beginning, that which we have seen and touched. We proclaim these things concerning what? The Word of Life, and it's the same Greek word, logos, which is kind of really particular to John's writing, as saying, "Hey, actually." Jesus is God. He's kind of like this Word of Life, this God. And so the two really mirror each other. They seem very similar to me. But the deal was that John, in his gospel, was writing. The difference is the purpose. In his gospel, John was writing to Jewish people like him who really wouldn't have grasped that God could come as a human in Christ. So in the beginning of John, his gospel, he's trying to say, hey, the God, the Word of Life, came in human flesh. The God that was at the beginning of time came to earth as Jesus. In 1 John, he takes a very different approach. See, the behind the scenes thing that he doesn't actually come out and say is that there are people that we now call Gnostics. There was kind of this idea called Gnosticism. And what that was that there was kind of a group of people who started thinking that the material world was basically evil and just kind of yucky. And they thought that if you could sort of learn secrets, like these little secrets of life, you could actually escape your physical being and become sort of like a spirit creature. And so these people started saying, hey, what if Jesus wasn't really a real guy? He was actually just kind of a spirit being that we may or may not have seen. Isn't that way easier to explain? Maybe that's the case here, that Jesus was just sort of like a spirit that you think you saw. And so John was really writing here to say, no, don't listen to those people. And he says here, I've seen the guy. I've touched the guy. He's a real person. He's a real person. And knowing that person, even though we can't see or touch him now, knowing that person and knowing what he did here on earth is super, super, super important. And that's where that sort of, where he gets real harsh in this book, is where he's saying, hey, that's super, super important. It has an impact on you now, even though your life is later. And for those people that were reading this first, they would not have had the opportunity to see him. So sometimes, as John tends to have teeth in his first letter, I'd encourage you to just sort of dig into that. It's good stuff. Wrestle with that. We're going to deal with some of that up here too in the coming weeks. Also, the other thing I have to explain here is that John's approach to writing is super different than anybody else kind of who wrote stuff in the Bible. So be patient with it. It doesn't really happen. It's kind of jumbly. So, for instance, in his gospel, what John does is he sort of jumbles events in time and puts everything out of order, because what he's trying to do there is put them in order of importance to prove his point. So people get really frustrated reading John's Gospels, especially after reading the other ones. They say, oh, this is all, John didn't get what was going on here. He doesn't know what happened first and second and last. But the deal is he's not trying to give a chronology. He's trying to make a point. And so John also wrote the book of Revelation. And what he does there is he takes all these images that he had a vision of, but they're also very familiar biblical images. And he sort of crisscrosses them throughout the book. So you see things like a dragon, and then later he talks about a beast, or he talks about a lamb, and later it's a lion. And he sort of uses these biblical terms from the Old Testament and sort of jumbles them up to prove a point. Okay? And so he doesn't do much different in his letters either. He makes it real jumbled. And so what he does in this book is that he jumbles up the themes he jumbles up the themes. And I'm not much of like a tie-dye guy. So, you know, I've been told I'm more of like a plaid guy. And so, you know, tie-dye isn't necessarily my thing, but I think it goes great with this series because I think John's writing is very swirly. Very swirly. In fact, a friend of mine, Matt, I hope he's okay with me saying this, I was talking with him this morning. He said, you know, I was reading 1 John, it seems very cyclical. Yeah, and I said, that's really good because the way that a lot of people understand it is more like a spiral, that John has this spiral approach. And though that seems very technical, I want to put it in terms that I think everybody can understand. Because spiraling is just what's used in good education. In good education, that's actually just a term that teachers use. That's what I do for a living. I'm a teacher. And you've experienced that if you've been a student of even just elementary school. In fact, let me use an example from like let's talk about spiraling, like division, for like a fifth grade teacher. Okay, so think of like fifth grade math. And at the beginning of the year, a fifth grade teacher might just introduce or kind of review simple division, right? 12 divided by 4 equals 3. Right? They would review that. And then later on in the year, they would get to fractions, and they might come across something like an improper fraction, 7 over 3, and say, hey, the way we make sense of 7 over 3 is to actually divide 7 divided by 3, right? And we get 2.5. I hope I put the right answers up there. I didn't. Did I?
2 1/3. 2 1/3. 2 1/3.
I shouldn't have said anything. The people listening to it on the podcast wouldn't have seen me. 2 1/3. And, you know, or with percents. The teacher goes back to percents and goes, hey, you know, 1/4, 1 divided by 4, we get 0.25. Hey, that's 25%. Okay, that makes sense. And the kids will automatically say, well, that's just division. We keep doing division over and over again. But what the teacher's doing is coming back to division each time and sort of going deeper into it to expose something deeper and deeper each time he or she does. Okay, that's spiraling. It's coming back to something, exposing something deeper and deeper each time. So John does this with themes. So what you'll see is you'll kind of see something like sin pop up. Or something about how John sees Jesus. He'll kind of describe it, and you'll think he's done. And he'll come back later and say something maybe a little different, maybe even might sound contradictory, but what he's trying to do is expose something a little bit deeper. And so rather than be confused by that, I say dig into it. Maybe write it down, make a note. Hey, this is the second time he's talked about what Jesus is. Or this is the third time he's talked about hate. Why is he doing that? And to kind of dig into that sort of spiraling effect that he does. Don't worry, there's no math in the book of 1 John. So let's review a couple things before we close. Some features of 1 John would be obviously the idea of love and sort of the lovey-dovey nature of it. This kind of swirly effect where he's kind of layering on different themes. We talked about that there's some real heavy stuff in there. Some real bold statements. But why are there those bold statements? Well, it explains the whole love thing. He really is trying to explain the whole theme of love. But he's also trying to explain what joy is. Why would I say that? Why would I say that? Because at the end of what seems kind of like an introductory paragraph, it's not in like paragraph form, but what seems like an introductory paragraph, he sort of closes with this, closes his greeting with this statement, hey, why do I write this? I write this to make our joy complete. In other words, what's the whole point of this letter? To teach you about joy. To teach you about joy. So when we come across all this hard stuff, and all these crisscrossing themes and all these different things that really do seem confusing to me each time I read it, I'm reminded that the whole point John's trying to make is to teach us about joy. Now, we've just closed this speaking series on joy and learning about joy. And we do a lot of talking about joy now, which I think is great. And I do a lot of talking about joy just in my conversations with other people here at church and other people here not at church. Hey, I'm learning about joy. But the deal is, I guess I come with sort of a warning tonight. And that is, don't let that just be a thing that we say. Let's not just leave that as a thing we say, like, oh, joy. Oh, I just want to be more joyful in my life. Or, oh, I'm gonna choose joy this week. Don't let that become sort of one of those, let's not let that become sort of one of those Oprah-isms, dare I use the term. You know, like the, do you remember those things? Like, you know, follow your bliss, right? Follow your bliss, or speak your own truth, right? We can sort of say those things. We could kind of justify those kind of statements for anything, right? I followed my bliss by, you know, getting a double order at In-N-Out Burger and a milkshake, you know, and I was following my bliss. It wasn't very responsible, but as we start to use those statements, they start to lose their meaning. They start to really lose their meaning. So what's beautiful about this book and this series is that I think that we're going to continue to learn about joy and get kind of really deep into what John says joy is and who the person of Jesus is and how that causes joy in our lives. If he's writing about joy and then he says all this really heavy-duty stuff about Jesus and who that is, maybe there's something there for us. The people he was writing to, they were the ones saying, oh, maybe Jesus didn't really exist. Maybe he... Oh, did I do something? No. Maybe he was just like sort of a spirit creature. Maybe he was just a myth. And the story of Jesus kind of started losing its real punch. And John said, no. Let me stop and let us take us back. And so we're not there yet with joy. Joy is not sort of losing its punch. But I think what we can do is prevent that from happening. Prevent joy from losing its punch in this church and say, hey, why do we have joy? Let's go deeper into that. Joy is not a myth and Jesus is not a myth. Let's go deep into this right now. And so I'd like you to take out your connection cards. And worse than mixing up a denominator of two with a denominator of three, I did a worse mix-up and I didn't get my next steps in this week. So you'll see a blank area under as a next step. I will. So I'm going to let you just kind of write in on your own. And you can be as creative as you want, or you can kind of follow one of these choices. And, you know, one thing I would encourage you to do tonight, just as we worship and Hans leads us into some song, is just to have a prayer on your heart and just say, God, I want to know more about joy and love. I want to know more. I want to experience more. And just kind of have that prayer on your heart as we sing tonight and as you engage in worship tonight. I think also a great step would just be to write down, hey, I want to read 1 John this summer. Guess what? There's 5 chapters. What about reading like 1 chapter a day every weekday? That's a great idea. And read it through, not just once. It's going to be super confusing. It's still confusing to me when I read it. Read it through a bunch of times. It's short. Do it for a few weeks. And lastly, we didn't say anything about this yet, but some folks are, and I'm not sure exactly who it is. Who is it? Chris and Hans. Chris Morrison and Hans Akshoff are going to lead a Discover group on 1 John. That's what you call it. Late breaking news. And if you would like to get more information, I don't know what days of the week it is or time or whatever, but if you're just halfway interested. Oh, is it on there? Oh, Discover groups. Yeah, just write down on there you want to learn more. Tuesday, Hans says. So with that, let's just pray. Dear Jesus, as we learn more about you, teach us about joy and teach us about the abundant life you have for us. Don't let our season of seeking joy just be snuffed out, but cause it to go deeper in us as we learn to know and love you.